This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You need surgery.
Bisexuality.
Bisexual.
I'm bisexual.
Bisexual.
Triple bypass.
Bisexual.
Bisexual.
Bisexuality.
Bisexuality. The best of both worlds.
Triple bypass.
Triple bypass.
Triple bypass on Joy 94.9.
Well, good morning. Good evening. Happy Tuesday. Happy Bisexual Visibility Month. It is Tuesday. It is the representation hour. Allow me to tell you how things are. Tonight, I want to take you on a journey of visibility. I want to look at the first bisexual characters you can remember seeing, hearing, reading, loving, making your own. This is Triple Bypass. You're on Joy. Poetry in them. That was Bic Runga with her cover of The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face. And that's what we're all about tonight. The first time ever you saw a bisexual face on screen or read about one or, you know, whatever. The first time you saw bi plus representation in pop culture. I've been asking the interwebs for the last couple of weeks, and the interesting thing is, most of us can't remember. It's almost as though when you look at the world with bi eyes, you allow yourself to assume everyone's bi. As I said, this is the representation hour for Triple Bypass on Joy, and I'm here to tell you how things are. I don't make the rules, but I will share them with you. So I would also really, really love to know who were the first buys you ever saw on screen or read or heard in a story. Email me at onair@joy.org.au or SMS 0427 joy 949. I want to know your past. Well, at least, you know, your history with the consumption of pop culture. Don't send me personal stories. It's Tuesday night, kids. And I will kick us off with, look, yeah, okay, it is headcanon, but you all know how I feel about headcanon. Headcanon is the truth. And when I started thinking about this, celebrating bi visibility by looking back at the first time we remember seeing a bi plus character on screen, my brain kept telling me it was in Pump Up the Volume. Don't at me. I know nobody in that movie does anything to suggest that they might be bi plus other than existing. And, you know, we're everywhere. I saw somebody commented on a happy Bisexual Visibility Day post that we are like the plague. And you know what? I'm happy with this fabulous purple plague. Anyway, pump up the volume. Let's talk about the important things in life. Anybody who saw this movie in, when did it come out? 1990? Yeah, must have been 1990. And was not affected, confused, excited, intrigued by the combination of Christian Slater and Samantha Mathis is either lying to you or they didn't see the movie. Because my goodness, those two. And then that scene on the lawn, yeah, you know the one I'm talking about. Anyway, so apparently my brain has filed Samantha Mathis's character under B for bisexual. So there you go. That's my one. And look, while we're on the subject of Pump Up the Volume, because I am always happy to discuss this movie, it's, how old is it now, 28 years old? Oh, goodness me. It's old enough to have children. I would just like to celebrate how prescient this movie was, this vision of a gatekeeper-free future, as Jason Bailey put it for Flavor Wire. You know, we've got everyone's favourite late 80s, early 90s misfit heartthrob, Christian Slater, taking the airwaves into his own hands, turning himself into Happy Harry Hardon, with this this kind of disregard for whether it was okay for him to do so. So let's claim him as one of our own. Let's call Happy Harry Hardon a bicon, because, you know, I mean, how's this for a quote? I like the idea that a voice can just go somewhere uninvited and just kind of hang out like a dirty thought in a nice, clean mind. Maybe a thought is like a virus, you know. It can kill all the healthy thoughts and just take over. That'd be serious. If that doesn't sound like the words of a beautiful dirty bi, I don't know what does. So in celebration of Happy Harry Hardon, Pump Up the Volume, and the headcanon that everybody should experience, which is Christian Slater and Samantha Mathis on the lawn in Pump Up the Volume, here's Leonard Cohen with Everybody Knows.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rose. Everybody knows.
Look, before we go any further with this, I think it's only fair to also point out how clearly queer-coded the two of them were in this film. Samantha Mathis is all heavy, blunt bob, pork pie hats, blazers, excessive amounts of beads around her neck, big bobber boots. Christian Slater has cuffed jeans and a quiff. Yeah, everybody knows what that means. Sure, if Leonard Cohen says something, then it's true, right? So if I said that Pump Up the Volume is an epic bisexual love story, and then for no apparent reason whatsoever, Leonard Cohen came on and started saying everybody knows, that makes that whole thing true, right? Right. It's 9:15. You are on the Representation Hour for Triple Bypass on Joy I am Jennifer, and tonight we are celebrating Bisexual Visibility Month by having a look at the first time we remember seeing bisexual characters on screen. And here's the interesting thing about asking this question. Well, I found it interesting, is that so many of us don't remember. Rosie Thomas on the Twitter was one of those. She says, "Do you know, I actually don't. Can you believe that? Hope that changes moving forward. The only person I can think of, and I was an adult, is Kalinda Sharma from The Good Wife." And Kalinda comes up a lot when we talk about the first time we saw a bisexual character on screen. And I think it's because she is so unapologetically queer. She is not interested at all in discussing her sexuality or her sex life with you or any of your representative heirs or assigns. She's Kalinda, and you can deal with it. When she is asked by her lover, Lana, why she likes sex with men, presumably, you know, as opposed to women, she just says, "I don't distinguish." Now, you know, that's a little bit problematic because sex with people of different genders is often different. But she never apologises for the way she is. She never does anything to suggest that she wishes she was otherwise. And a South Asian bisexual private investigator who grew up in the UK and works for an American law firm as a central character in a well-funded, well-marketed, highly recognisable TV series is awesome, is so exciting, and I'd like to see more of it. When I first saw The Good Wife, I can remember remarking to somebody, and again, we're coming back to coding here, that Kalinda wore a hell of a lot of leather for a straight girl. You know, it's the leather jacket, the leather skirt, the leather boots and the steely gaze that just makes you think, you're a bit queer, aren't you? Aren't you, darling? And turns out she was. Another delightful character that we're going to get to, who also likes to rock some leather boots and a leather jacket, is Rosa Diaz. So there you go. From my sample set of two central characters on TV shows that are femme-presenting and identify as bisexual, that's 100% success rate. I don't make the rules. Janelle Monáe and Cold War. Not only exciting our ears and tingling our hearts, but also fulfilling my obligations as tonight's spokesperson for all bisexual people worldwide to mention and play Janelle Monáe at least once. Confession, when I first heard Cold War, I did think that Janelle Monáe shouted out Kalinda, and I thought she was giving a little shout out to Kalinda Sharma. She's not. She's shouting out Kalindo to, of course, Kalindo Parker, who is her guitarist, co-composer, Lord of the Voodoo Children, and all-around kind of amazing musician and producer. But still, you know, the bi brain does what the bi brain wants. Yeah. Anyway, thanks, Jennifer's brain. moving right along, it would not be appropriate to talk about early representation of bisexuals in pop culture if we didn't mention Cabaret. The 1972 film, adapted from a 1966 musical, based on a 1939 novel, tracks the divine Sally Bowles and her relationship with, poor old bugger, and Max. Max. Sally, Brian and Max were the first example of bisexual men and polyamory that I think a lot of us would have seen. Certainly a lot of us who were obsessed with movie musicals. Not that there are many of us who are, of course. And 1972, you know, we're 45 years on from this film, and it stands up. And I think it stands up because it's honest. Sally is seductively intriguing, but also heavily flawed. Max and Brian are vulnerable. MC is just the hottest thing in the world, and of course was then played by Alan Cumming and revived by Alan Cumming, which, you know, I think we all know makes MC as canonically bi as a bi can canonically be. But it's, we get some really beautiful and again, really matter-of-fact bisexual moments in this movie. For example, when Brian first moves into the boarding house where he meets Sally, she's describing her friend Fritz to him, and she says he's a divine playboy, hurtling from party to party, seducing everyone in all directions, which is just delightful. And we get all these little moments, little reminders that that the queers are here. We've got the musical number Two Ladies that MC performs with two of the performers at Kit Kat Club, which is all about how the three of them are in a thruple, but there's room on the bottom if you drop in. We've got this great exchange where Brian and Sally are having an argument. They've been in a relationship for a while now, and Brian says, "Screw Maximilian!" And Sally thinks she's got the final word and says, "I do!" And Brian turns around and says, "So do I." It's just glorious. And their sexuality is not the centre of the story. It's not even the most important subplot, the most important subplot being, of course, the rise of Nazi Germany. It's just who they are. So it informs how they interact with each other. It informs how they view the world. It certainly makes them all more vulnerable to to the tendency of artists and queers to be disappeared in the late 30s in Berlin. But it's not the only thing that defines them. It's not the only thing they have to offer the story. And it's bloody beautiful. If you haven't seen it, find a copy, have a look. If you have seen it, watch it again. It's just, yeah, it's messy and it's human and it's queer as fuck. You are on Joy. It's 28 minutes past nine and this is the representation hour for Triple Bypass. And so, in celebration of cabaret and queers on screen, here's Liza with a Z doing a whole bunch of medleying.
Étranger, stranger, glou-clic, sous-ayen, je suis enchanté, happy to see. Sagen, willkommen, bienvenue, welcome in cabaret, oh cabaret, to can change like that to the one little word, married. See a palace rise from a two-room flat to the one little word, married. Und das Grau in Grau wird auf einmal blau, wie noch kein Blau jemals war. For you wake one day, look around and say, somebody wonderful married me.
And you curse through the wind at your face when you haven't any shoes on your feet. Your coat's thin as paper and your look's 30 pounds underweight. When you go to get a word of advice from the fat little pasty, he will tell you to love evermore. But when hunger comes to rap, rat-a-tat, rat-a-tat, at the window, see how love flies out the door. Money makes the world go around, the world go around the world. Money makes the world go around, the clinking, clanging sound.
Maybe this time I'll be lucky. Maybe this time he'll stay. Maybe this time, for the first time, love won't hurry away. He will hold me fast. I'll be home at last. Not a loser anymore.
like the last time and the time before. Everybody loves a winner, so nobody loved me. Lady peaceful, lady happy, that's what I long to be. Well, all the odds are in my favor, something's bound to begin. Everybody, oh, they love a winner, so nobody loved me. Lady peaceful, lady happy, that's what I long to be. Taste the wine, come hear the band, come blow that horn, start celebrating. Right this way, your table's waiting. What good's permitting some prophet of doom to wipe every smile away? Life is a cabaret, oh chum, so come to the to have this girlfriend known as Elsie, with whom I shared four sordid rooms in Chelsea. She wasn't what you'd call a blushing flower. As a matter of fact, she rented by the hour. The day she died, the neighbors came to snicker. Well, that's what comes from too much pills and liquor. But when I saw her laid out like a queen, she was the happiest corpse I'd ever seen. I think of Elsie to this very day. I remember how she turned to me and said, what good is sitting all alone in your room? Hear the music play. Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret. And as for me, I'm going like Elsie.
Goodness me. Liza Minnelli singing apparently every single song from the movie Cabaret there. It's 21 minutes to 10. You are with Jennifer. This is the representation hour for Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. And that little cabaret medley gem is especially for all of my cast and crewmates from Ophelia Thinks Harder, who are all rehearsing tonight without me. I'm here with you instead, talking about the first bi characters we can remember seeing on screen. And I think one thing that's quite common for people of around my age is that some of the first bi characters we saw on screen were part of the early 90s film trope of the murderous bisexual woman. Alex on Facebook said, yeah, probably Sharon Stone in Basic Instinct. Hardly a positive example, but, you know, that's the one I think I first saw. Maybe Frankenfurter from Rocky Horror predated Basic Instinct. I'm going to say both of those are pretty slim on the good role model front. But let's have a chat about this trope of the bisexual woman and how that was, for many of us, the first time we saw a bi plus character on screen. The early 90s had this kind of great wave of thrillers, murder, stalker, thriller type movies featuring murderous women. And those murderous women were often highly sexed and often bisexual. And there seemed to be this desire by, cishet white dude filmmakers to equate female sexual pleasure and particularly bisexuality with murderous intent. So we had Sharon Stone in Basic Instinct. We had Jennifer Jason Leigh in Single White Female. Madonna in Body of Evidence, which is hilariously bad. Totally go and check that out. Drew Barrymore in Poison Ivy. And yeah, it was just this wave of blonde women who were multi-gender attracted and wanted to kill your husband or your dad was basically their jam. And look, I would love to say that this trope is over. Unfortunately, Darren Aronofsky has made Black Swan and Brian De Palma has made Passion, so I can't tell you that. What I can tell you is that we seem to be a little more generous in the bisexuals that we are willing to label murderous, because we've had a recent rush on murderous bisexual men. Think Frank Underwood, Raoul Silva in Skyfall, Logan Delos in Westwood, Poison Ivy, the cartoon character, not the movie, featuring Drew Barrymore. They're all super murderous bis. There's so many of them, in fact, that I think we might give them their own show shortly. I think that's fair. But for now, I will just give a little nod of the hat, nod of the head, tip of the hat, something or other. I'll wave at the memory of Dr. Frank N. Furter, who we see sexually assault two people, create a human using a mixture of magic and science, kill another human that he apparently already cut out half a brain from to make his other special human, and then threaten to kill a bunch of other people. And yet somehow, at the end of it all, we care about him. My theory is that we care about him because of a song that is coming up in just a moment. It's 17 minutes to 10. I'm Jennifer. You're on the Representation Hour for Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. And we are talking the first time you saw a bi plus character on screen or on the page or heard them. And I want to know, what was yours? SMS me 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au.
On the day I went away,
goodbye
was all I had to say.
Now
I want to come again and stay.
Oh my God.
Smile, and that will mean I'm there. 'Cause I've seen, oh, blue skies through the tears in my eyes, and I realize I'm going home. Everywhere, it's been the same.
Feeling
like I'm outside in the rain.
Feeling
free to try and find a game.
Feeling
cards for sorrow, cards for pain.
It's 13 minutes to 10. You are on the Representation Hour with Jennifer for Triple Bypass on Joy. And let's slide on over and talk about a bi-plus character that we all can love. This is a super recent one, but a couple of people, including Triple Bypass's own Ruby, have said the first time they watched a show and thought, that's my life, was with Rosa Diaz on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It was really cool that the 99th episode of Nine-Nine, which was entitled Nine-Nine, was just completely overtaken by a bi. Just Rosa Diaz turning around and saying, well, yeah, I'm bi, get over it. And there we go. We all got what we knew we needed, which was a character who is unapologetically bisexual, who doesn't hide that fact or use euphemisms to explain it, and who doesn't allow the question of whether they should explain their sexuality even come into conversation. And then the internet delivered to us all when, in the final episode of season 5, Gina Rodriguez of Jane the Virgin fame
pulls up as Alicia, the rideshare driver, and Rosa goes into instant bi panic. And it's bloody glorious. And the thing that's most exciting about it is when they, when the showrunners of Brooklyn Nine-Nine started talking about how they were introduced, keen to bring in a love interest for Rosa Diaz, but that it might not be the woman that Diaz had been talking to on the phone. And anyway, they didn't know who it was going to be. Stephanie Beatriz, who is openly bisexual in real life, started listing off her dream castings for the potential girlfriend. So it was Kate McKinnon, it was Jennifer Lopez, and it was Gina Rodriguez. Gina Rodriguez then very promptly tweeted, can I get an audition, Brooklyn Nine-Nine? Applies lip gloss and puckers lips. Steph, you know I'm ready and on the sidelines, like, go Rosa, go. And go Rosa did. And it happened. And they were on screen and just instantly into each other. And a million little bisexual hearts all over the world screamed out in joy and fluttered off like a million pink, purple and blue butterflies to celebrate the world. Ah! Two bisexual characters played by two bisexual actors, two bisexual women of colour. And neither of these characters are vilified. Neither of them has to be perfect. Neither of them has to do anything except be the characters they would be anyway. And to round it all off, Terry Crews' character, Terry, gets so excited by it that he does everything he possibly can to bring them together. Now, everything he possibly can is just to yell out something along the lines of she's single. But my goodness, his heart was in it. And I'm here for it. I want to see more of this. So it may not have been the first bi you ever saw on screen. It may not have even been the 10th bi you ever saw on screen. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say it was very possibly the most wholesome bi you've ever seen on screen. Yeah. So thank you, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I know you're all listening. And Stephanie Beatriz and Gina Rodriguez. Next time you're in Melbourne, just give me a ring. I'll show you around. Everything will be fine. You did a great thing. And you made my little queer heart happy. It's 8 minutes to 10. You are on the Representation Hour with Jennifer for Triple Bypass on Joy. SMS me in. Tell me who you love seeing on screen. Tell me who the first bi character you can remember seeing in pop culture. You can SMS 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. And while we're on the subject of people who've SMS'd in, hello, Tony. Thanks. I'm glad you loved that Bic Runga song at the start of the show. Bic's pretty amazing. I'm going to be back to have a chat to you about one more early bi plus character. You are on Joy. It's 6 minutes to 10, which means we've only got 6 minutes more to share together the magic of the first time any of us saw a bi plus character on screen. And I'm going to come back to Ruby, our very own Ruby, who pointed out a character that I had completely overlooked, despite the fact that when I was at uni, I wrote a dissertation that ended in this show, largely in part because I was obsessed with this character, Willow Rosenberg from Buffy. Look, I haven't forgiven Joss Whedon for sullying my memories of all of his stuff. I've not forgiven him for his attitude towards women. But that doesn't lessen how overjoyed I was at Willow and Oz when they got together in Buffy. And I think this is another one of those relationships that awakened things for a lot of people. You know, we had Christian Slater and Samantha Mathis in Pump Up the Volume. We had Mulder and Scully, and we had Willow and Oz. They were both super cute, super wordy and awkward, both super ginger. and both super eager to just be kind to the people around them. Possibly helped that Oz was also a werewolf, because, you know, we know werewolves are all bisexual. They're not wolves, they're not humans, they're werewolves all the time. Yeah, we've been into this before, haven't we? But then Oz and Willow break up, and Willow, in the episode Hush, gets involved with a group of Wiccans, and she meets Tara McClay, played by Amber Benson. And they realise that the two of them are interested in actual magic. Euphemism, anyone? And there's that moment where they're hiding from the Monster of the Week in the laundry room, and Tara takes Willow's hand, and they combine their powers and fling this huge vending machine across the room and barricade the door. And it's one of the most intimate things I had ever seen on screen. Now, over time, Willow does turn into the big bad bi, and we do get a bury your gaze when Tara dies, and all of that is terrible and annoying and unnecessary. But those first moments when we got to watch them fall in love, despite the network's reluctance to show them kissing, they were golden. We started with subtext, and then it wasn't subtext anymore. It was just text. And then Oz comes back to Sunnydale, and Willow has to choose. And so she has to come out and be honest and tell the people around her. And the really great thing, and the beautifully encouraging, reassuring thing for those of us who were in a similar position, is that the people around her just loved her the same. It's pretty rubbish that Willow is called a lesbian very often. The whole hey gay now business in season 5 is annoying. But we got those first moments. We got to see Willow figuring out that she could still be attracted to Oz and always have feelings for him, but right now be in love with Tara and want to be with her. And I think that was a really lovely way for a lot of us to see a bi-plus character on screen for the first time. And on that note, I'm going to wish you good night. This has been the Representation Hour. I will still be Jennifer after I leave the studio. It's Triple Bypass, you're on Joy, and we're coming up to 10 o'clock. So between now and when I see you at the end of next month, just remember, Bi-Visibility Month is over, but you are still visible. We are all still here. We all still totally exist. We are not fictional. And that's great. So for now, here's Christine and the Queens with Tilted. Good night.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.